Welcome to Inside Ag from Canada's Farm Bureau, the voice of agriculture. I'm Shelby Varner. Technology is constantly advancing in agriculture. And so in to talk about how they're seeing technology advance is K-State Beef Extension veterinarian AJ Tarpoff and Precision Agriculture Technology instructor from Northwest Kansas Technical College, Jack Polifka. Gentlemen, thank you both so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Jack, we're going to get started with you, and your expertise lies more in production agriculture. To get started, could you talk about some of the advancements you've seen within the industry as it relates to machinery?
So, I mean, I think some of the big ideas are just getting some more exposure to all the different producers across the state. So, obviously, things like auto steer guidance, GPS control, all those kind of things, you know, standard issue in all the new machinery, but a lot of producers are not to the state where they're using the brand new machines that come with everything. So looking at some backwards compatibility, what can we do to get that onto some existing machinery, and how do we make it affordable to everyone, provide some of those efficiencies? The other things that we're seeing, there's a lot of AI introduction. So can we use certain sensors, readings, mappings, all those kind of things to try to interpolate some kind of answer that we can use for meaningful data and give us some kind of actionable result off of that? Can we use that for a prescription? Can we use that for a change in our rates? Whatever it might be, can we use that data to make a decision about, you know, what crop is really our best decision here? Trying to gather all the data that we have and turn it into something that's meaningful to our producers.
Jack, you mentioned GPS monitoring. How does that play into farmers being able to use that in their fields?
So with GPS monitoring, what we can do is really with any kind of machine that goes through the field, if we can provide a location with whatever accessory data they're collecting, so whether that's, you know, the rate of application of whatever machine they're using, harvesting, with our throughput of the machine, moisture, as we get into protein sensors, those kind of things, if we can really locate that with a spatial designation on the earth, we can make a lot better management decisions on our operations. So whether that's differential marketing of our commodities, or that's changing some application of our inputs to try to save money in one place where we're not producing and reinvest that money and somewhere where maybe we could chase a higher ROI, giving that spatial location is really what makes the difference. And then we can compare our results year after year after year, because it's all tied to that one location.
A lot of information that they can find from GPS monitoring. A step up from that, there's been talk about autonomous tractors. What are you seeing about that and hearing about it? And what do you think it might look like in the future?
I think it's going to, whether we like it or not currently, it's going to have to at some point go into implementation. I can't speak for everyone, but I can certainly speak for us out in this area. Workforce development is a major issue. We are fighting all the time to try to fill positions. You know, it's a great problem as a college instructor to have that we have 10 times the job opportunities as we do people to fill them. It makes us feel good because we've got good placement. But that is also our economies out here struggling, because now people are going with unfilled positions and specialized labor. So as we have those issues, eventually we're going to have to move into the role of having some autonomy come in to have operations completed with less people. So that there's a lot of different equipment that's being tested with it. We've seen some different robotics equipment go out. I mean, the reality is I think we're closer to it than anybody thinks. We're experiencing a lot of different, you know, auto guidance and those kind of things. It's really just one step down from it. Basically, you have somebody sitting in the cab that's there to push a button that says, yeah, okay, you can turn around, it's safe. I mean, other than that, there a lot of them, you know, a lot like our kids, they're in there hanging out, watching Netflix, whatever, going through the field till they get to the end. It tells them, hey, it's time to turn around. They push a button. I mean, it's just a step away from not anybody having to be in there. So there are some implementations of that in tractors. We've seen it in some spreading equipment. Raven's got some good systems that they were trying out up at Husker Harvest Days this year and showcasing. So I think it may have some public resistance at the beginning, But eventually, as it's implemented and everyone sees that it is a viable option, it'll just move on into adoption just like everything else does. And kind of following the adoption curve of technology that everything else has.
Now, to kind of take technology off the ground and up into the air, what are drones being used for in production agriculture?
So currently, a lot of what we use them for is health monitoring. So we can put a sensor package up underneath whatever bird or UAS that we have and use all kinds of different spectra of electromagnetic radiation to make an evaluation of plant health. Other things that we can use there is maybe stand counts, those kind of things. We can also look at different elevation mapping if we have the right technology strapped underneath the bird. So if we have like a LIDAR sensor, we can look at that for 3D modeling, looking at, you know, watershed management, what's our water flow, those kind of things. Can we decide, you know, the topography of our terracing that we want to install, some of those kind of things. We kind of really started in that vein. Things are starting to move on with application. So we have an application drone at this point where we're moving towards the edge of obsolescence because it's the field is moving so fast. It's so hard to keep up. But as that moves on, there are some options for small scale applications of chemical, broadcast dry material, what have you. And as the public and as the government and the FAA, they all get used to, here's these actual good implementations of what we can use these things for, and these people can do it safely and they're being responsible, those laws will continue to develop and we'll be able to get bigger, heavier payloads and continue to move on and on. So, you know, at right now it's at a small scale level, but as we continue to adopt it, continue to show that it is an effective idea, it is a viable idea of use, that'll just continue to build into the future.
Talking about into the future, with the combination of things that we've seen in technology and tractors and automation and those things, how does the technology advancements in seeds with that combination of technology and equipment support agriculture?
It kind of really has to work hand in hand. So we've worked with a handful of companies with different hybrids, different crops, and along with different technologies. So at what level do each of these things work together or against each other? And how do we find that sweet spot? And the, you know, on that subject, the biggest target is, you know, agriculture out here in Northwest Kansas is far and away from any agriculture out in Northeast Kansas. And so you really can't compare us apples to apples. We're really apples to oranges. And so what works for me out here in Sherman County may not have any implication of what's going to work best for somebody, even in Thomas County, one county over. So it really is finding based off of our climactic region, our soil types, our past production methods, all those kind of things. What can we do to put the right hybrid in the right place using the right technology to make sure it's at the right depth, has the right nutrients, you know, the seed trench was closed properly. We're applying our fertilizers in a way that that plant can utilize it efficiently. When we get into irrigation, are we irrigating it efficiently? Are we putting that water in a place where that plant can use it properly? So all of those things kind of all work in conjunction. And as we look at seed technologies and the different ideas of plants and plant technologies that they can use, what really fits for us and works well for us may not work for somebody 100 miles away. But that's what we're trying out to see, you know, what are our best options that we can couple together for our region.
Jack, that's some fantastic points you bring up of what works for one person may not work for others, which I think is also true, not only in production agriculture, but also in livestock care. So AJ, coming to you, what advancements have you seen in how livestock are being handled?
When it comes to livestock, I love hearing about the crop side and all the technologies that are being used. And it blows my mind. You know, technology has come upon us rapidly over the last decade and a half, and it's kind of taking small steps on how do we adapt this technology to help cattle production, cattle care. And I think it's, you know, similar to the production crop side, is labor is the major issue, right? and labor is the major issue. So how do we incorporate some of these technologies to help with efficiency, help with our labor pool problems? We're not replacing cowboys and cowgirls out there checking for the health and well-being, but what we're doing is giving them tools to so they can be more effective. And implementation of some of these technologies that I'll talk a little bit about, you know, it's not wide scale. They're still being toyed and played with and kind of tried out for the first times. But I think technologies that have come in immense, it has changed whole feeding regimen in feedlot cattle. So it's being implemented. It's being implemented on the large scale, but not what we traditionally think about. You know, we don't have an automated feed truck driving everywhere and delivering yet. Nothing along those lines. We don't have an automated drone doing pen checks for cattle, but there are some things that are out there that are very well utilized. And as these technologies develop, and they will continue to develop, we have not hit the pinnacle by any means, but producers can always rest assured that programs of continuing improvement, continuing education, like beef quality assurance, a national program that state implemented, that's a three-year certification program, producers can get updated on best management practices, technologies that are proven, and how to implement those on their operations to ultimately be more effective, more productive, provide better care and welfare for our animals. That's the goal of every operator. And we can utilize technology to help with those, but it doesn't replace the daily chores. We're not to that point. It's that, you know, the human aspect is so critical with cattle production. We're not going away from that. We're just trying to help that. So that's kind of where we are today.
AJ, you mentioned we still have our cowboys. We still have our cowgirls. We're just trying to give them tools to improve. What are one of the tools that have been provided for medicating livestock differently?
Yeah, so medication. You know, we medicate animals for a lot of different reasons. Whether it's preventative, we might be administering something to take care of parasites or to vaccinate the animal against a specific disease. Or we might be medicating an animal with a true antibiotic, something along those lines. We're trying to treat or control a disease. And that can be through an injection, that can be through something through the feed. So kind of starting with the feed, obviously we have a lot of legislation and legal parameters on how we can use medication in feed. Well, now we have micro machines in these feed mills that are precise dosing these rations with that product under the veterinary feed directive with oversight of a veterinarian to properly target these animals. So now we have a precise measurement that's been delivered into a feed ration that's maybe going through a feed truck or a feed mixer wagon that's GPS coordinated to make sure it goes to the right pen. So we don't miss, you know, we're feeding the proper ration to the proper animals at the right time. You know, so there are technologies that are there on the feeding side that is just amazing. You know, there's even technologies that are still in the works, bunk reading. I mean, how much the animals ate the day before, where now it's automatically telling you how many pounds of feed was left after the last feeding. You know, right now we have people driving around the yard making that estimate. So there are things to help that are still in there for that targeted medication through a feeding practice. Now, on the individual level, if we're not treating an animal through a pen, on the individual level, let's think about, you know, injectable antibiotics. Right. For the beginning of beef quality assurance, we were concerned about injection site blemishes. There are new injection administration where it's needleless. It uses a very potent, very directed air burst to be able to deliver a medication, you know, and it's low doses right now. So we're thinking about a vaccine or, you know, maybe actually have some researchers here looking at some of our reproductive injections, some of the hormones that might be used for, say, a different type of AI from what we were talking about earlier, but artificial insemination, that some of those products can be used with no needles. So now we're helping the beef carcass, we're delivering it in a more appropriate way. So we have technologies there with maybe a different type of application, but also the injection itself. Most of our medications, so say we're going to give a traditional antibiotic for a treatment of a, say, respiratory disease. Well, the antibiotic that we choose is dosed on a per weight basis. So we forget about some of the most critical technologies. Well, weigh scales to be able to weigh and properly have the weight of the animal so we can properly target dose to, you know, the 10th of a cc. Now we can do that. And we even have automated syringes where it takes the weight from the weigh scale whenever we weigh the animal, and it automatically doses the gun that we can administer it. So we're trying to fine tune and take out some of the guesswork on some of those things. Now, there are remote delivery things that, dart guns, I'm sure people have heard about. Obviously, that's not mainstream. There are concerns associated with that. There's a time and a place for some of those situations. But again, it comes down to labor, that sometimes it's a necessity to treat an animal that it absolutely is, time is of the essence. So we have remote delivery. We have kind of targeted delivery, change in delivery when we start thinking about the air burst and some of the, you know, the air dosage. So all of these things have played a key role in something as simple as administering a product or treating a sick animal. So all of these technologies are playing at the same time, and we're just trying to fine tune it to make sure that we're doing what's right for the animal, to help with labor, but ultimately protect the safe wholesomeness of the beef products that we're producing.
Being able to target and keep track of livestock and caring for it, there's also more technology that helps with that, something like electronic identification devices, also known as EIDs. What are some of those different things like EIDs that help with monitoring the livestock?
Right. Electronic identification is it's nothing brand new. We've had low frequency EID tags that have been used in the cattle industry for a long time. And the idea is, how do we passively read animals without reading an ear tag? How can we do that at the speed of commerce? And I think that's important to consider. It's the speed of commerce. Now, how fast can we move animals through where we know and can identify every single animal within a group? You know, we have low frequency where they move past panels. We have high frequency that gets pinged off of all, you know, think about driving down the interstate through a tollway. Those are high frequency. We can read a lot of different cars going really fast. Well, we can read a lot of different cattle going really fast, but also some, and that's for just for identification, which identification is critical for, you know, for the industry. But a part of that is back to cattle care. You know, a cowboy or a cowgirl can't read an EID tag from 30 yards away. So that's challenging. So the visual, the dangle tags are still very important. But now there's some new wearable tags or collars or things like that that measure other parameters. If we think about it, is we're most concerned about respiratory disease, sickness, lameness, all of these issues that can cause a problem for the animal. Well, cattle are they're a prey species. They want to hide all of their illness. And whenever an animal caretaker comes into a pen, well, they could be the sickest animal in the group. They go disappear into the rest of the group and they hide. Well, as a prey animal, that's what they're supposed to do. That's what they're designed to do, is to hide any issue. Well, for us, you know, that are trying to look after their well-being, it's challenging for us. So now we have technologies like a wearable ear tag that has its own power source. So now it is using an algorithm to be able to track the animal's movement, track the animal's eating behavior, drinking behavior, how long it lays down. And all of a sudden it plugs into this formula that if something is wrong, if it's no longer acting like it was, we've had a sudden change, we can flag that animal and actually blink this blinking light. So now our cowboys and cowgirls can go and find that individual animal because it's flagged as something is abnormal. Now, it's not going to diagnose it for you, but now it tells us, it gives us those oddballs. Something is abnormal. Something's not right. Well, that's the first thing we teach, is in order to know abnormal, you have to know what normal is. Well, that's what this tag does, is it sees what normal is. And whenever it deviates, we can pull those animals and we can flag those animals. It is tied back to their identification number, how long they've been there. We can see what its treatment history is, and then determine, hey, do we need to send somebody to go get it? So that's an example of a wearable. There are other wearable devices. I don't know if anybody's heard about the Moo Call. It's a wearable device they put on the tail of heifers and cows that are just getting ready to calve. And all of a sudden, how it raises its tail, it sends you a text message when your animal's going into labor and getting ready to have a calf. You know, so there are these cool wearable pieces that, you know, we've gone way beyond just identification. We're trying to pinpoint some of these things, which cost points are different for everybody, but it's not for the wide scale use. But we've proven that it can work. which is really neat. Apart from identification is identifying sick animals, yes, out in the pen, but for our feedlot industry, how do we properly identify which animals are most at risk of disease or sick on arrival when they're acting like nothing's wrong? Well, there are some tools on arrival that are even being utilized, things that are similar to a stethoscope to be able to figure out if they have lung damage. There are things like blood testing where we can pull a minute amount of blood to be able to determine if it has an inflammatory response. You know, all of these take time, but we are getting closer to speed of commerce where some of these tools, some of these technologies can be used in real time that are cost effective to, one, properly better utilize some of our critical resources like antibiotics, but also target therapies on the animals that need it most. So it's kind of, we're trying to triage at a very specific level through behavior, through actual term is biometric monitoring. We're trying to figure out what's happening. So a lot of cool things that are in play. Some of them are being utilized at smaller scale levels. Some even are being tried out at larger scales. And as technology develops, usually costs come down. So it's a matter of time before even smaller operators, these things can be in use.
One more piece of wearable technology that I want to talk with you real fast, AJ. Geo and virtual fencing. What is it and how could you see it impacting Kansas?
It's a new area. You know, I think most folks may have, you know, remember the invisible dog fence, you know, or it keeps animals within their yard. Not necessarily the same thing. But again, this technology is, you know, kind of a, it's not to replace an external fence. A 5-strand legal barbed wire fence in the state of Kansas is not changing by this technology. But this technology, what it can do is, and when we look at the sustainability and proper use of the resources that we have at hand, say a pasture land, how do we target graze that pasture land to its most productive means? Okay, how do we make sure that cattle go and graze on that side of the hill that they wouldn't normally go and graze? How do we make sure that, you know, we are utilizing that grass resource or that grazing resource to the most of its ability with the inputs that we may have put in? Well, we used to do it by, well, we'd split fence, we'd have multiple different paddocks, we would rotate graze and do all these things, which producers are out there doing it. They've been doing it for years and it's phenomenal. Well, if anybody's put up fence recently, 5-strand barbed wire, it's not a cheap investment. I mean, the old adage that we used to use is, oh, $10,000 a mile. I don't think you could even get close just in supplies right now, just with inflation and the elevating cost of everything that we have at hand. So some of these kind of, you know, these new fencing technologies is it's invisible. You know, we have some wearable technologies that we can move these animals and graze them over different locations. So we get an appropriate graze. We utilize the resource, you know, better. But again, we're not out there, you know, the shepherd holding the staff, moving the herd or the flock bits by bit. You know, that's essentially what this tool is doing is we are targeting grazing very specific means, but an entire group to utilize the resource better. Now, we're just on the verge of some of these technologies on what they can do. But into the future, yeah, I mean, it comes down to speed of commerce. Do the animals need to wear something specific so they respond to it? How often do we have to move it? You know, there's a lot of questions, but the ideas are sound and the goal is sound. So now we're matching technology with the goals at hand on let's better utilize the resources at hand. Let's provide the necessary health, you know, environment, everything else for the animals to ultimately produce beef. And so all of these fine tuning helps with labor, helps with productivity, helps with overall use of the resources at hand. So I'm excited that some of these things are coming to the market. But again, there's still a lot of fine tuning to be done.
Absolutely. Jack, bringing you in with AJ, what are some of the things that excite you most when you think about technology and ag and what is to come in the future?
I think we can all agree, and AJ, I hope you can agree that in agriculture production, in the future, we're going to be asked to produce a lot more with the same as we've always had. And so something that really excites me is as we look to build new technologies And for me, I'm a data junkie. I love crunching numbers. Spreadsheets is like my jam. Looking at all the new data sets that we can access. So as we're using all these different technologies, whether it's crop production or animal science or livestock production, what is all this new incoming data that we can use to really analyze things and find our efficiencies? So in broadacre agriculture, you know, we like to have comparisons or metaphors. And you know, when we talk about football and compare it to agriculture, football is a game of inches. Well, I think broadacre agriculture is a game of pennies. So as we're looking at needing to increase our production and our efficiency, how can we get every cent out of every kernel of corn, you know, berry of wheat that we can on that ground and produce as best we can, as efficiently as we can, but also sustaining our resources so we can continue to do it. We don't want to mine out our resources and find ourselves in a position where we can't continue on. We need to produce efficiently, maintain our soil, make sure it's healthy to continue on for the generations beyond us. And I think one of the best things that we can do for that is analyze the data that we're producing. It comes in at an astronomical rate. It's, you know, sometimes it's just almost dizzying to sit down after a crop season with all of the different data sets that we have and go, okay, we have it all. Now, what do we do with it? Okay. And then as we're looking at that, you move that, well, I have all this stuff from this year. Well, we have it from the year before that and the year before that. And how can we compile all this into something that we can use to better our operation? And again, we can look at the comparisons of some people's. It's hard to do that because of the regional differences we talked about before, but that's what really excites me. As we're looking at these different technologies, I'm always seeing new companies here and there coming out with an X widget or a Y gadget that senses this new thing out of the soil, or we can now read this data out of the crop, or we can do whatever it is. And how can we use all of these different data sets that everybody's trying to pull together to really up the efficiency of everything we're doing? And for me, the big sell of precision agriculture is trying to continue this or sustain a farm operation for the future generations. So how can we take everything we're doing now, maximize our return on investment, and make sure son, grandson, great-grandson all have the opportunity to stay on that farm because we've built our operation to the point where it's a good, sound business and we continue to move forward and we can feed the world while we're doing it.
So, I mean, what really excites me is, you know, we talked a lot about efficiencies and really fine-tuning these different pieces. You know, and it's part of that reflection is the U.S. cattle industry is the most efficient cattle raising industry in the world in history. And we are already using technologies to make it even better. But apart from the efficiency, and as a veterinarian, I'm very excited to see how we can utilize technologies to better address health concerns, to improve welfare of those animals on an individual basis and an individual environment where we can pinpoint specific animals that need attention quicker. And we're getting close to that to be able, you know, hats off to everybody that they're out checking their animals, they're breaking ice, they're doing all these big important things, but now we can fine tune it down to the animal level where we can provide that targeted approach, targeted intervention at an earlier time than we ever have in history. So I think kind of coupling the efficiencies, the welfare, the well-being, the sustainability, the efficiency is of utilizing the resources that we have available. Because like it was mentioned, we do have a growing population. We are going to be asked to produce more than what we have. Even as efficient as we are, the job is never done. We are going to be asked to do more and more, and we can. And labor is an issue right now. We're going to help with labor. Obviously, you know, we've got new producers coming up that are more comfortable with some of these technologies. So I'm really excited to see how the new age of producer utilizes this technology, not as a replacement, what I refer to as the core, with, you know, the chores, the daily chores, the daily grind sometimes of, but we have the on-farm skills, but now we're utilizing these technologies to make our skills more efficient. We're not replacing them, but we're making them more efficient to ultimately grow, to develop, you know, whether it's an animal, whether it's a crop, whatever that is, we're utilizing that same skill set, but maximizing on that efficiency. So it's molding all of that together it's fun, and it'll be interesting in the future. And I always talk with my students that what I'm teaching today, we're going to rewrite the book in our lifetime.
You gentlemen both are obviously very excited to see what technology is going. How do you guys like to stay up to date with what's happening?
I think the biggest thing that we do, and I can speak to the students, and it's actually it is an assignment that I give our students is keeping up to date, because we really are in this space with a different technology. We're trying to stay on the cutting edge. Sometimes it's hard to stay off the bleeding edge, but we try to stay cutting edge with all the different equipment we have. And the biggest way we do that is to have them find some kind of source of information weekly and give a story or whatever they're looking at. So if they see an article, they watch a video, listen to a podcast, share with everyone in the room, hey, you know, I saw this cool new technology that they're using in corn production this week. Hey, I just heard about this merger of these two companies and they're looking at moving on to this. So, I mean, the big thing there is using everything at your disposal. So, you know, whether that's a website, magazine article, I prefer podcasts. So I do listen to some podcasts in my free time. There's a whole plethora of podcasts out there talking about ag production across the board. So those are kind of the ways I try to keep up to it. Plus, it's not something to me that's an extra step. It's not something you have to go above and beyond to do. A lot of times if you're sitting in the tractor anyways or whatever, you can pop on a podcast, throw on a YouTube video in the background, audiobook, whatever, and have something going on in the background that you just absorb that as you're moving forward. So that's kind of what I encourage people around me to do, is just make an effort to stay up to date with whatever publication service suits you.
You know, and I'll bet technology is moving so fast, it's tough to stay up to speed on everything. I'm the first one to admit that. And on the animal side, it's, you know, recommendations. How do we keep up with this? Is just being aware, you know, reading those popular press articles, seeing what is being discussed. Going to industry events, whether they're extension days. You know, we're hosting Cattleman's Day here in a couple of weeks. Then we're going to have all these industry partners. We're going to have a trade show. I love going to those different events, talking to different companies. Everybody's always happy to talk about what the next new thing is. It's good to have that understanding. So be willing to, you know, devote some time to go to some of these events, talk with some people, talk with your neighbors. What are people hearing? What are people talking about? What is the university researching? What is the new research that's coming out on some of these technologies? There's so much information. It's easy to get lost in the digital age of, you know, I call it Dr. Google. But don't be afraid to reach out and have those trusted sources of information. From the extension side, selfishly, that's why we're here. That's what we do, is we weed through some of that mess for you. So you understand, you know, what's available, what's on the cutting edge, what research has been done, and ultimately it return on investment. You know, what are we here? What could be feasibly implemented? And it's all about just kind of that industry connection and just knowing what is happening around you, because things are changing at a fast pace.
Gentlemen, thank you both so much for taking the time to do this and share some of your knowledge on precision agriculture and livestock care. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was K-State Beef Extension veterinarian AJ Tarpoff and precision agriculture technology instructor from Northwest Kansas Technical College, Jack Polifka. If you've enjoyed listening to the podcast, please give it a like and share it with others. I'm Shelby Varner, and this has been Inside Ag from Kansas Farm Bureau, the voice of agriculture.